On May 4, 1970, four students were shot to death by Ohio National Guardsmen on the campus of Kent State University. That act, some say, marked an end of innocence for the student movement in America. The people you are about to hear were in Kent in 1970, and all the background sounds were recorded at that time. The shootings lasted 13 seconds, but the causes behind them began 4 days earlier.
Tonight, American and South Vietnamese units will attack the headquarters for the entire communist military operation in South Vietnam.
My name is Alan Canfora. I was a junior majoring in pre-law. Several of us watched the show on television on the night of April 30th, which was a Thursday evening. And I can recall that we were aware the president was going to be on television, so we gathered to watch, you know, what the development would be. And we were just stunned when he announced that the war was being expanded from Vietnam into another country, into Cambodia.
John Seiberling, candidate for Congress, released this statement to 1150 News just moments ago in regards to the president's Cambodia decision of this past week.
It now appears that the president failed even to consult the Senate or the Senate Foreign Relations Committee before making his decision to send American troops into Cambodia. This is one more bitter fruit of the failure of the Congress.
My name's Jerry M. Lewis. I'm a professor of sociology at Kent State. In May of 70, I was a faculty marshal. The first rally was in the afternoon, and people were protesting the violation of the Constitution because Nixon had declared war, or certainly broadened the war. And so several graduate students representing a variety of departments, but particularly the history department, buried the Constitution as a symbol of its death. And so that was the first rally that occurred, was on Friday afternoon, May 1st.
And one of my roommates said, Alan, come on back up to Kent. It seems that there's going to be a demonstration that evening in the city.
I'm Leroy Satram. May 4th, I was mayor of Kent. We'd heard some rumors that there might be some problems, and so I called back to my police department and found out that there was some trashing and rioting on North Water Street, so I left the meeting and came back around midnight.
And we moved out into the street and blocked the traffic, and we were wondering if the cops were going to come back, and they didn't. So the crowd grew in size to the point where I think there were perhaps 300 or 400 students in the street clapping their hands and chanting anti-war slogans.
Well, we found them burning a trash pile in North Water Street in the middle of the street. We couldn't come down the street, and so I went back to City Hall and got organized to break up the crowd.
Portage County Sheriff and campus police inside everywhere. Here comes a troop of riot squadmen coming down East Main, heading toward the downtown area. A lot of people going down on the south side of East Main, kind of following the riot squadmen, consisting of about 25, 30 people.
I was quite disturbed that they would do that, and so we called a curfew and went down and closed up the bars and dispersed the crowd. It was difficult because it was a Friday night. It was warm, one of the first warm nights, and there was quite a crowd down there.
My name is Dan Lodea. I was a student at the University of Akron, dating a girl at Kent State. I was a fraternity guy, wasn't very political at the time. Friday night, it was just a fraternity night out. People were out on Water Street having a good time. Things got a little out of hand. It was the first nice night of spring. All I remember was windows started breaking. I don't know who was responsible for it. It could have been the fraternity guys. It certainly wasn't political, that's for sure.
When the signal was given, then the crowd moved down the street, heading south on Water Street, moving toward Main Street to the main intersection. And it was at this point that the first SDS veterans that were on hand that moved the crowd down the street through the first rocks, through the first bank windows.
The four big main picture windows at the First Federal Building here have been broken, and the glass you hear now is the sound of it being knocked out for repair. One big hole at Ohio Edison that's patched up with cardboard and masking tape. It will have to be replaced, however. The City of Kent service trucks downtown on North Water now, helping with cleanup procedures. There's various 55-gallon barrels here just filled with glass. The hardest building hit by count was the Portage National Bank, including the credit department.
My name is Rebel, and the year before May 4th, I was a full-time student at Kent, a math major. I became very active in SDS in the previous year, was arrested 13 different times.
On the whole, the campus, the students on campus are pretty reasonable kids. That they're easily led, though, sometimes by others. There's no question there's an influx of outsiders.
None of the people that would be organizing were actually here in town at that time. Most of us had just gotten out of jail that week. You know, after 3 months or 6 months in jail, you really didn't want to have anything to do with a demonstration.
But our police department, and we had other federal agents in town and so forth. They were here really undercover. They're very secretive.
You know, for me, all I would have had to do was be in Kent on that Friday night, and I would have been arrested for some sort of inciting a riot.
You know, you see these bums, you know, blowing up the campuses. Listen, the boys that are on the college campuses today are the luckiest people in the world.
I am distressed and appalled at the destruction within the city during the past 8 hours. As mayor, I have declared an emergency exists, and a curfew will be in effect at 8 p.m. on Saturday, May 2nd, 1970. We ask for the cooperation of all Kent citizens during this period.
That was Kent Mayor Leroy Satram announcing curfew plans for tonight.
I called him early that Saturday. Might have been during the night. I just wanted to know if he had troops available, if I needed them. They could be available. They were busy, too. A trucker strike on or something, I think they would have remained. If I didn't request them by 5, they wouldn't be available that day. That was Saturday.
I'm Charles Fassinger. In May of 1970, I was a lieutenant colonel. I was the commanding officer of the 2nd Squadron of the 107th Armored Cavalry Regiment. I was also the senior commander of troops of the National Guard on the Kent campus.
Saturday was the anti-ROTC action.
Well, that evening, about 8 o'clock, a group of, I believe, mostly students were marching around campus protesting, trying to get people to come out of the dorms to protest the war and head back to the Commons, which was, of course, a traditional gathering place. And a group of students headed for the ROTC building, which was on the edge of the Commons, and began sort of a attack.
I'll never forget that as we came up over Taylor Hill, as we came flooding down that hill, students were just whooping it up, and it was really, you could sense the power of the crowd. And people went down to the ROTC building, and at this point there were no police there. While there were several very inept attempts, very amateurish attempts to set the building on fire.
Chief Miller wants another unit up on campus. The kids have cut the hoses to the fire trucks and they are setting fire to the building. Kent, a mobile one. 4-H reports they're stoning the deputies up there. Can you get help up there?
It was a rickety old building. It was built during World War II. It was literally an old army barracks. And I'm sure it was to be torn down soon anyway.
The National Guard is on the interstate. They're coming off the interstate now. They're on the way in up 43.
And so then there was a second attempt by the students to burn the building. Again, a very inept attempt.
I understand they're pulling the fire department out. They're pulling out the fire department. The ROTC building is on fire.
Finally, one small corner was caught on fire. Just maybe the flames were 5 or 6 feet high in a window. The firemen came back a second time. And this time they had a lot of police with them and sheriffs, and they started shooting tear gas, and they were taking, I remember, flash photographs. So the crowd moved away from the building, ran across the Commons, and as we looked over our shoulders, we saw that there was, the fire was out.
Jones, go ahead, he's answering. Have the troops detruck and fix bayonets.
My name's John Baklowski. I was in the 107th Armored Cav out of Ravenna, Ohio. I was 23 years old at that time. I got a phone call that said that there was a problem on campus to get to the unit. Then they trucked us up there. I believe I rushed from work or something.
If you come any further, you will be arrested. Move back up into the building.
It seemed like a lot of confusion, you know. Things were burning. I remember we had to break up little crowds of people at that time.
They've been after anybody.
I mean, they're not giving. They don't even list John and Rotzi. Yeah. I hated to see that building. They didn't care.
How did you get out?
I ran. I dropped the fire extinguisher and ran. They were on that side of the hill. My friend Gaines, I don't know what happened to him. I couldn't go back for him. They're not giving anybody a chance. Yeah. Here they come now. You better move. Don't run. Not worth it.
And I remember when the guard and the fire trucks came back the second time, many of the students headed over to the tennis courts on the other side of Commons, and some people attacked a shed there, which is used to store equipment, and that was set afire. And many of the students fought that fire, and I stayed there and kind of sort of marshaled because I didn't want the guard to attack the students who were fighting the fire.
Joe, they're in the trees around the library. There's a fire starting now up at the booth. I think the information booth is being lit now.
Some of them thought it was a joke. For one instance, I told this one individual to move. He was by a tree here, and he just sat there. And finally, you know, I just had to use not really force, but come on, guy, get out of here. You know, there's enough trouble. And finally, the individual left. I believe some of the guard had tear gas at that time, but I can't really recall. Yes, sir. Yeah, we did, because we had gas masks on. I recall that now, because I had a hard time seeing. We were kind of running and this and that, and your goggles or your glass part was fogging up and that. And he'd have to take it off every once in a while and see where he was going. I had the old M1. I had no ammunition at that time.
Even with the sidewalk rolled down there.
Very mysteriously, a half hour after we had left the building, we came back and there was the building. Somebody reignited the building. We think it was a government agent or a police agent or a provocateur that finished the job that the students failed to do, to create the pretext to bring in the National Guard and then to terrorize the students.
Joe, that ROTC building, and I think it's going to go up again, and there's a lot of ammo in there. If you've got some funny little story there, you might have to check.
All right, in the doors and through the glass and get him in. Keep in line.
Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest if you're not involved, you leave the area. You are subject to arrest. I suggest you leave the area. You are subject to arrest.
ROTC, the specific name I don't know, but burn like mad. Go ahead.
45. I've got the National Guard unit. They want to seal off the town.
All right.
You're listening to Remembering Kent State 1970. Up next, Sunday, May 3rd.
A second night of violence was climaxed by the burning of the Army ROTC building and the calling out of the National Guard at Kent State University Saturday night. University officials estimate damage to the ROTC building at $50,000. Members of the National Guard and State Highway Patrolmen moved.
And then the next day, of course, we heard Governor Rhodes on the radio live during his press conference. And we were in our apartment. We were studying that day. We had exams that week. And we were kind of amused when we heard his extreme rhetoric. But we just thought, well, this is a guy trying to get votes. We had no real thought that the Guard was also listening to this speech. And they heard him say, these are the worst type of people we harbor in America. They're worse than the communists or the Nazis.
And terrorize a community. They're worse than the brown shirt and the communist element and also the night riders and the vigilantes. They're the worst type of people that we harbor in America. And I want to say that they're not going to take over a campus. And the campus now is going to be part of the county and the state of Ohio. There's no sanctuary for these people. To burn buildings down of private citizens, of business in the community, then run into a sanctuary. It's over with in Ohio.
Well, I think it clearly inflamed the situation. I remember this was an era where law and order and being tough on student protesters and anti-Vietnam protesters was the thing. And so I think it was a very cynical attempt to improve his political chances to win the primary.
Let me also say that death is not going to stand in their way to answer their purpose. And we're going to employ everything that we possibly can to protect the buildings that are paid for by the taxpayers of Ohio. And we expect complete cooperation of everybody involved in this. Colonel Caramani, the Highway Patrol.
Well, we're a mobile organization. We can put 100 men on in a very short time. We have men that are well trained, but they're not trained to receive bricks. We won't take it.
Any hoodlum with a gun will be handled the same as any other hoodlum. The next phase that we have encountered elsewhere is where they start sniping. They can expect us to return fire.
Will there be classes held tomorrow?
What's that?
Will there be classes
held tomorrow? As far as I'm concerned, keep the university open. We'll keep it open for you.
General DelCorso, how long do you expect to keep the guards in camp?
Well, I'll answer that till we get rid of them. I don't want to take any authority away from you, General, but I want to cut it short.
You got me outranked, Governor, anyway.
Our full support, anything that's necessary, like the Ohio law said, use any force that's necessary. To the point of shooting, we don't want to get into that, but the law says that we can, if it's necessary. Let me say this, that if they can intimidate and threaten Joe, the merchants of this community and other people, no one is safe in Portage County. It's just that simple. No one is safe. And I do not believe that people understand the seriousness of these individuals organized in a revolutionary frame of mind, believe me.
Kent State University President Robert I. White issued a four-point statement this afternoon outlining the university's position concerning this weekend's campus disruptions. The president said,
"The hopes of all on campus have been placed in jeopardy, and whether or not any part of that loss can be retrieved depends upon immediate, responsible actions from all quarters of the university community. We must show to the nation that Kent State University has much more to it than the ugliness it has seen in our midst. Second, we ought to be and are grateful for the effort and response from so many members of student and faculty leadership in the various security operations. These efforts helped temper the situation. Third, by order of the governor, the National Guard will remain in the Kent community and campus until its leadership decides their departure is safe. Events have taken those decisions out of university hands. Widespread damage and threats in the community have created an alarming situation. Fourth and finally, the university plans to maintain normal operations and classes will meet as scheduled."
Yeah, I'm Dean Kaler. I was a student at Kent State University in 1970, in the spring of 1970. I was a first quarter freshman at the time of the shootings on May the 4th, 1970. My objections were to war in general and not the war in Vietnam. I grew up as a member of the Church of the Brethren, which is basically a church that has very definite views about pacifism and feeling that there are other ways to solve problems that countries can get into, and we don't need war, and war is something that's wrong and destructive. Sunday afternoon, it was a very festive mood. I mean, I was looking for a friend of mine who was in the National Guard, and his unit had not been brought over to the Kent campus yet, so I didn't get a chance to see my friend, but it was relaxed atmosphere until it turned dark.
This time helicopters, two of them as a matter of fact, or three I see now, are flying overhead the Kent State University Commons area. It's the very heart of the KSU campus. There are well over 1,000 students now congregated on the slopes of the Commons in front of the Journalism Architecture Building.
Every place you turned, there were guardsmen, personnel carriers, guards, you know. So yeah, they were all over the place. I was really surprised.
Well, they're going that way, I'm going that way.
It's now 25 minutes before 9. The group has started to move toward the northeast part of the campus.
The third night of protests at Kent State University has started with a rally on the Commons. Crowds started forming in front of the Kent State Student Union about a half an hour ago while they were...
Students and white-helmeted police are both right in the center of Main and Summit, Main and Lincoln right now, right?
Back around the dorm area around there in the tennis courts and headed for the Commons. They were ringing the victory bell and chanting cries like, "Ho, ho, Ho Chi Minh, we want the Kong to win." They're currently still ringing the bell, trying to get many onlookers to participate in the march. National Guardsmen are reportedly on their way, although they have not been sighted. A State Highway Patrol helicopter is circling the area at low range. Many of the dorms in the area are emptying as interested students continue to flock down toward the Commons area to watch what could be another protest demonstration in the shadows of the ruins of last night's fire of the ROTC building. Along the march route, this is Greg Benedetti reporting for WKSU News.
Later on that evening, Sunday evening, there were guardsmen, there were guard helicopters flying overhead, which upset a lot of people in the city of Kent. Basically, it was sit down on front campus, and students sat in the street protesting the guard. And we're told that the president of the university was coming to talk with him and never did. And then that rally was broken up by force. It wasn't a rally, it was sort of a spontaneous sit-in.
But then Sunday night, it was tense. I mean, Sunday night was about the scaredest I've ever been in my life. There was a big sit-in out in the street on Route 59 in front of the campus. There were helicopters going up overhead. It was a very, very tense, very, very scary situation. We thought if there was going to be trouble, I would have swore it was going to be that night.
That request came down through the police department. They wanted to meet at the gate down there. It never happened, but I guess we didn't visualize anything coming out of it, a meeting of that nature. I was there. In that general area, I saw what was going on because I was incognito. Well, it was quite a riotous bunch. I mean, I didn't get very close to it, but.
Some pushing. As the guard moves, the students.
Inside the dorm. Do not remain on the outside. Major Wallach. Any people that resist, arrest them immediately. These people must go immediately to the dormitories or be arrested.
We got gassed again. Oh my goodness, that stuff's horrible. We're standing in the wind, and this thing directly, or came directly across on us. Oh my eyes.
So all you fascists live for going there, huh? You're
gonna do your own damn
stuff. All these fascists, all these fascist going down there. Hey, you know that was the best name when they called me today.
How would he not work for 50 a day forever? It's 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I don't think he's cut his salary down. He's
trying to fool that guy. These kids are so goddamn on communications. Goddamn, they'll go down the far end of these buildings and talk to each other, and they'll sneak all the way through, and they'll be coming out those doors. Through those doors. I mean, they're well together, man. They got their shit together. We don't. When they tell us, they call us out for Teamster strikes, and we're armed for Teamster strikes, they told the truck drivers.
I honestly don't know. We're cruising around. I've got Channel 8 with us because we have to stick together. We've been threatened by the kids and everything else. But
where's those helicopters?
I would suggest they get somebody else down here. This thing's getting hotter and hotter by the minute. As far as I know, they still overpowered a library, and they have to overpower the radio press room, or is that the paper press room they overpowered?
The school newspaper
has been in shambles now. We can't get near it. There's quite a bit of tear gas that's been popped around. We've been gassed, and stones have been flying. One kid has been stabbed. The National Guard has been hurt. It's getting real sticky.
You know what the order was up the president's house, sir?
Right.
Huh? Yeah. So you turned around and told them if they moved towards the president's house, they made a line from the side of Berta over up through the president's fence. And they turned around, and we were in the inner perimeter, and they were the outside perimeter, And they said if they turn around and they're going to tell them to disperse twice, if they don't disperse, fire. They gave them orders to shoot over the president's house.
At groups of individuals?
Fire
into the crowd.
He said fire. He said shoot low. And what the hell is low?
Yeah.
Well, what? Man's stomach is dead. What the hell is low? Knee? This shit keeps up. They're going to have to tell me.
What?
They're going to have to tell me.
Oh.
They got to. The doctor's in their way. Oh, they're going against the odds right now that nobody's been killed.
After a calm day on the Kent State University campus, violence erupted for a third successive night as students confronted National Guardsmen and police officers Sunday night. The National Guard, who had announced a 1 a.m. campus curfew earlier in the day, imposed a curfew at 11 p.m. as a result of several violations of orders banning assemblies and demonstrations. Tear gas was used to disperse the crowds. At 12:30 this morning, police reported 44 arrests last night, mostly stemming from curfew violations. The two-day total of arrests now stands at 84. Officials at the University Health Center treated three students and one National Guardsman for injuries. One girl was treated for cuts at the health center and was transferred to Robertson Memorial Hospital, listed in fair condition. The day started with Governor James A. Rhodes visiting the campus, inspecting damage from Saturday night's disturbances. Rhodes declared a state of emergency on campus. By mid-afternoon, University President Robert Otto White outlined.
This is Remembering Kent State, 1970, an examination of the events leading to the shootings at Kent State. Up next, Monday, May 4th, 1970.
The following day, on Monday,
Got up early, went out on campus. The atmosphere was still very hostile.
In essence, if the term is meaningful to you, we're in a sense under martial law on this campus. The grave danger, and this is what I heard last night, a bunch of girls saying, well, my mommy said not to go down there, but boy, this is fun. Let's go on down. And this is the grave danger, the curiosity seekers moving into the rallies. There's one scheduled at 12 noon. Moving into the rallies, and when your head's busted, or when you're arrested, or when you're tear gassed, you have only yourself to blame. Nobody else.
Because there wasn't much learning going on. There wasn't much education happening. Every time I turned around, I was being frisked and searched by National Guard troops, and it wasn't a very pleasant situation being a student here.
I felt oppressed by this presence by the National Guard on campus, even though I knew a lot of these guys were like my age, and I knew that they were probably tired and weary and everything else. It just was a very dangerous situation that was brewing, and I was afraid that they were going to start beating people up. That's the worst I think was going to happen. The rumor was around that there was a lock and load situation on, that the guns were locked and unloaded.
At no time was the faculty ever informed by the university administration that the weapons were loaded.
I got a call about 10:30, and there were some other guard officers there that called my headquarters and said, General Canterbury's on his way over. The decision been made that rally was one of those that would be banned, that it would not be held. In fact, a legal officer was already there from Columbus and had talked to the Attorney General about the legality of the Guard being there in that particular rally, and the General Canterbury had talked to General DeCorso and a couple of other officers from Columbus about...
A student came by at a luncheon meeting, and a student said, let's go to the rally, and I said, okay, and I said, maybe I better take my marshalling band, although we had essentially disbanded. So I took it and went out and stood above the hill, and the students were gathered around the Victory Bell, which is about 100 meters or 100 yards from the National Guard, who are standing around the burned down ROTC building. So it was clearly a symbolic presentation on both sides.
As the noon hour approached, the crowd began to get larger, and there were ultimately about 1,500 of us there at noon. Finally, at one point, the student Ken Hammond got up on the Victory Bell at exactly noon, and he made a statement. He said, is it the feeling of the people here today that we should participate in the national student strike because of the invasion of Cambodia?
I don't think there ever was a rally. There was just a group of people standing around listening to somebody screaming at them in a bullhorn. And then the Ohio National Guard troops decided they were going to use their bullhorn and chase everybody away.
The chanting went on, and not much more than that initially. And that, you know, didn't upset anybody, didn't hurt anybody particularly. Guardsmen had heard it before. And we sent out a Kent Security Net person with a bullhorn in a Jeep to be sure that they could hear that. And the first pass that he made across the commons in front, they threw stones at him and jeered him and that sort of thing. But it did make a full sweep pass and came back. And again, we waited some more to see what would happen. And I think that, again, just helped probably focus the group some more. And the focus appeared to change from anti-Vietnam, anti-Cambodia, anti-Nixon to anti-Guard. And it was more pigs off campus, guards off campus. And that picked up in tempo.
They told us to try to get the group to disperse, and we were walking up what I call the hill. I was one of the three, I believe it was three of us, shooting the tear gas. But I remember them trying, I think, telling us to disperse the group, and we started working our way towards the hill. And I was firing tear gas in, I think, two rounds. That was it.
So I had to... gave the order to one unit commander to take his unit, which was roughly 30, 35 people, and to pursue the route around Prentice Hall side of Taylor, and took the other two unit commanders around the right side, Johnson Hall side. Our plan at that point was to just follow the group, as had been done the very evening before and had been done in other civil disturbances, is to essentially follow the group and continue to split it up and see what respond to its, whatever it does.
The guard swept over the hill, past the pagoda, and went right down into the practice football field. And they stayed there for about 10 minutes, and that's what's been described as the ping pong match or the tennis match. The guardsman would shoot a tear gas canister and the student would run out and they'd pick it up, throw it back at the guardsman, and the guardsman would shoot another one.
How far can you throw a rock? Not very far. I remember grabbing a handful of stones as I was starting to see a little better and just flinging them in the direction of the Ohio National Guard. Mind you, I was 100 yards away. I hit some students who were in front of me, and I remember students turning around and hollering, "What the hell are you doing?"
And it was at this point in time that I came down near the front ranks of the crowd, and I was waving one of these protest flags, and as I did this, some of the guardsmen got down on their knees and aimed the rifles toward me and other students. At this point, Troop G formed into a small huddle or two.
The so-called huddle that people talk about often, I'm assuming, was the huddle, which was really the officers, and there was three company commanders and a couple junior officers, myself, Major Harry Jones, General Canterbury was there. We met, and primarily at that point, it's my decision as the commander of troops what we do next. I had been in constant contact with my headquarters, and we were trying to get more tear gas, and there were some other things going on. We were getting some reports of a sniper on Johnson Hall.
They talked among themselves, and then the 76 guardsmen began to retrace their steps. They seemed to be in a retreat. They marched up the hill, away from the practice field, and everybody cleared the area, and we thought, well, the guard is going back up the hill. They're going to go back to the commons. The confrontation is over.
I had an M79 grenade launcher and a 45. After I ran out of the gas, you know, and the students seemed like they were coming closer and closer, I grabbed my M79. I was holding like a baseball bat in case I needed to, you know, get somebody off me, but I didn't have to because I didn't feel my life was in danger at that moment.
I heard a sound. I don't know what that sound was. Some have said they heard a shot. I don't know that it was a shot, but I heard something.
And I recall, like, I heard a shot off from the distance, and a fraction of a second later, it opened up. And I remember students, seemed like an awful lot of them, hitting the ground. I did not hear an order.
I didn't think that I was any real threat being 100 yards away. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. They turned and fired, and I remember hearing the bullets ricocheting off the ground before I heard the sound of the shells being discharged. I jumped on the ground, covered my head, and prayed that I wouldn't get hit, and then I did get hit. And it just felt like some very strong bee sting, you know, hitting me. And then my legs got real tense and relaxed, and then I didn't have any feeling from the waist down.
I felt the bullet hit me in the wrist, and I heard other bullets hit the tree, and I think that the guardsmen shot at me on purpose because I was very visible and very vocal and active that day. On both sides of me, there were students out in the open. One of them, in fact, was shot through his foot, and that, ironically enough, was my roommate, Tom Grace.
I was knocked to the ground. I just found myself on the ground, and I didn't know what had happened. And I tried to lift myself up to look down at my ankle, although I was not really in any pain. It was almost as if someone had given me a body blow and just knocked me right off my feet. And I heard a voice yelling to me, "Stay down, stay down, it's a buckshot." And I looked over to my right, and there was Alan Canfora, who was my roommate.
Some fired high and some fired low. The firing went on for about 13 seconds, resulting in four fatalities and nine wounded. I think what should be pointed out is of the 70 guardsmen on the hill, only 28 fired their weapons. Most of the guardsmen didn't fire. And one can imagine what would have happened if they had all fired their weapons.
It was in the open. I had nothing to shield myself from the bullets. And the firing just kept going and going and going. And it didn't seem to me that it was ever going to stop. We had no means to make it stop.
It looked exactly like a firing squad, and that's exactly what it was.
Name is John Philo, and I was a student majoring in photo illustration in the School of Journalism. After the shooting, it seemed to go on for a while. Said I ought to get a picture of this, and remember watching a guy take aim towards me. You know, you sort of locked in on that, and then deciding to take the picture, and then watching sort of through the camera, his gun go off, a bullet go through the metal sculpture out front and then hit embed in the tree or go through the tree. But I remember seeing rust, cloud of rust around that sculpture and a big hunk of bark fly off, you know. And I said, my God, this guy's using live ammunition. And I said, I gotta get out of here, this is crazy. And as I turned to leave, I think I took about five steps. As I turned and walked away, to my right was the body of Jeffrey Miller, so I
immediately ran towards them. I was certainly surprised to hear shots. So again, in what had to be milliseconds, instinct said, whatever threat there was is now not a threat any longer. The students are leaving or are laying flat on the ground. There isn't anybody coming towards us. And just instinctively, again, immediately gave the order to cease fire. At the same time, there were three of us essentially that did that, Major Jones and General Canterbury, who were all, one was on one side and one was on the other. Because of the sound levels and knowing how hard it was to control people at those noise levels, we immediately did it by physically hitting a guardsman, grabbing him, hitting his rifle, whatever we could get.
Sort of people yelling at me for taking pictures and hanging around until the university closed. From that point on, from the shooting and realizing it was live ammunition, it all became very dreamlike, very slow motion.
Hey, get rid of that camera.
Hey!
Get
fucking camera.
Where are you? What are you? What are you?
It seems that just moments after the firing stopped, a person ran to me, who I later learned had been a linebacker on the Kent State University football team, and threw me over his shoulder and carried me through the parking lot. And I remember being carried past the body of Jeff Miller, who, as many people are aware, was shot in the face and had a terrible head wound. It's the very famous picture the body lying there with the woman kneeling over the body with the outstretched arms. As I was being placed in the ambulance, my foot was hit into either the top or the side and sent a real jolt of pain through my entire system. And then I remember looking down, I guess it was to my right or below me, I can't recall now, and there was a student lying next to me who had a gaping bullet hole in her neck. And then I recognized that to be a person that I had been introduced to a week earlier for the first and only time by the name of Sandy Scheuer. And The ambulance attendants attempted to give her a heart massage, and then I just remember them saying that it's no use, she's dead, and they pulled a sheet up over her head.
I was upset. You know, I felt bad, you know. There was guardsmen and also crying. You know, some of them took it pretty bad. And I couldn't believe it. Right after that, I couldn't believe it, you know. Goes through your mind, was that really called for?
The majority of the people around the hill, the guardsmen that were on that hill, had been in more than one civil disturbance of some kind or another before. Glenville, Huff, there had been some disturbance in Akron, Youngstown. So, you know, we had all had some experience, and a fair amount of experience. And some of those were the more protracted ones, longer than 5 days, 6 days at a time.
The closest slain student was Jeffrey Miller. The next closest person was Allison Krauss. Third furthest away was Bill Schroeder. And the furthest slain student was over 135 yards away, Sandy Scheuer, and she was on her way to class.
You've been trained for combat, essentially, and you know there's a good guy and a bad guy. There aren't good guys and bad guys in a civil disturbance. They're all good guys.
The M1 is an extraordinarily powerful weapon.
Most of those who fired, large majority of those who fired, couldn't bring themselves to shoot at somebody. They fired over their head. And that is contrary to regulation. They're taught that you either shoot the wound, but you don't fire warning shots, you don't fire over the head, because of what can happen. A bullet's not very selective once it's in the air.
It wasn't like I was a freelance journalist and said the place to be was Kent State, May 4th, 1970, you know. It was just a student, you know, four were killed, 12 wounded, or how many? And it was me, you know. It's like, you know, right there, the being famous and being dead was very, there wasn't too many inches separating those two, you know.
All I saw was kids falling. That's all I saw. It was a mess.
I was up on third floor of Taylor Hall, and the guard marched out to the rugby field. Then they were surrounded, well, about two sides by students. And the students started storming them, mainly from the parking lot. So the guard retreated. Or
all about how they kept shooting tear gas and moved back.
Well, that was earlier. But the guard moved back to the corner of Taylor Hall. And while the students followed, and they were still storming them. But then all of a sudden, they got right by the corner and just turned around and started firing.
Close the university so we can forget about our dead brothers.
They were getting stoned pretty heavy. And they were, you know, they had their arms up like this to protect themselves. And it looked like to me that they were scared. That's all, and they fired at what they think was self-defense.
I was coming from the opposite way, and I didn't even know what was happening. I was in class, and I come from the opposite way. There's one guard standing there, and I was just walking towards him, and I never seen a machine gun before in my life. And that guy pointed that thing right at me and pulled the lock back and just started going like, you know, going across like this, like he was playing G.I. Joe across the field with a loaded gun.
All the kids were just sitting down there, and they started throwing tear gas in it. If we can't discuss our views, we might as well forget about American freedom.
First.
There's
once,
no freedom.
One State Highway Patrolman,
and if Rhodes wants
Guard.
To get elected senator, I think he better change his pig ways.
Right. He better have 10 cops for every student and shoot every student that steps out of line. Students were warned 5 different times.
Oh, you warned, you pig! What's the matter with you? You want to go
they
to Vietnam,
warned.
Change?
They, yes.
Go now! What do you think the National Guard's in it? What's the matter with you anyway?
They were warned.
Shit!
We have confirmed that 4 persons are dead as a result of this afternoon's disturbances. With the exception of a change, we have found that no National Guardsmen were killed, as we had reported to you earlier.
Nobody cares about us. All they care about them 4 pigs up there to get killed. They can throw rocks at us, and we're just going to stand there. They're pebble throwers, just harassing us. That's not the way it is.
Did they throw rocks at you?
Damn right they throw rocks at
you. You came here Saturday night. I was so scared Saturday night I was going to get it. It was pitiful. We went on top of a hill when that fire was down there. I never been so scared in all my life. It looked like about
300 or 400 of them just
But you weren't up on the hill when the people were shot.
We watched them get shot.
We watched them.
We were at the
room. We was looking right out the window. We was getting ready. We was all in line.
All I was saying was there's supposed to be a confirmed sniper on Johnson.
How do you feel about what happened to those people?
How do I feel? I feel it's about time one of them got it like that.
I don't like it.
Why?
I mean, I don't like to see anybody get killed, but I mean, we come up here, these people, all they do is stand around and give you a peace sign, throw rocks at you, harass you, call you dirty names.
I wouldn't shoot anybody. I hardly even let load my weapon when I'm on that hill. Why would I want to shoot any kid?
We want the ones you shot.
For a few minutes to see what the hell they come back.
You're going to find out who killed him?
Yeah, find out
who killed him.
The first problem is not to find out who killed anybody, but to prevent anyone else getting killed, all right? That's number one. And when that is taken care of, and
well, the students gathered back on the commons and began a protest, and the faculty marshals, including myself, were working with the students, and we were trying to figure out what to do. Some of the students were asking to stay there all night. Some others were asking who did the shootings and so forth. And then the guard general began to negotiate with Glenn Frank and a couple of other marshals, and clearly indicating that the students had to leave. The guard was going to come again, and you could see them getting formed up in their movement formation to come again. And that was pretty scary, I must admit.
Approximately 12 students out on the commons right now. At 12:45, National Guard has raised guns.
A number of students at that point followed us and reformed on the backside of Taylor Hall. And at this point, that group, and I guess not more than a couple hundred, violent, totally irrational. If there was a time that I thought there was a chance for a real confrontation that could have been catastrophic to both sides, was that point in time. The chance to forget the Vietnam and Cambodia and all those things totally are gone now, and guards off campus is gone now. It's you know, murder, killer, get the guard, that kind of thing. I think there were some at that point. My feeling as the commander of troops is that both sides were in a lot of trouble at that point.
March off of here, away from those men with the guns. They've got ammunition in it.
Let them slaughter us.
Hey, where are we?
Are they going to slaughter us all?
Listen, I'm scared to death. I'm scared to death that somebody else is going to get shot and killed.
Ask them now if they'll shoot us.
Man, you think Martin Luther King, he wouldn't have moved.
The troops are now coming over the hill right beside Taylor Hall. They're dispersing the crowd that was gathered in front of Taylor Hall. The crowd right now that's right in back of Johnson Hall is staying put. People are dispersing. Some are still sitting. Troops are coming over the hill. They're forming a line right in front of Taylor Hall. It's safe to assume right now that the entire crew right in the middle of the commons, including myself, is surrounded by National Guard troops.
And so Glenn Frank made a very famous and impassioned speech to ask the students to leave.
Please listen to me right now. I don't care whether you've never listened to anyone before in your lives. I am begging you right now, if you don't disperse right now, they're going to move in and it can only be a slaughter. Would you please listen to me? Jesus Christ, I don't want to be a part of this. Please. I'm begging you also, follow me out this way. Follow me.
She truly cared about people and life. On Saturday evening, she called home to tell me there was some trouble in the business section of Kent. She said there was some property damage and she was against that. She was not involved in that, but she felt they had to demonstrate. She felt they had to do this because there was no other way to express themselves. She resented being called a bum because she disagreed with someone else's opinion. She felt that war in Cambodia was wrong. Is this dissent a crime? Is this a reason for killing her? Have we come to such a state in this country that a young girl has to be shot because she disagrees deeply with the actions of her government? I want something to be done. What I would like to see happen is that my daughter's death and those of the other three children, as well as the wounded, not be in vain. I would like to see Congress investigate the situation and determine who authorized live ammunition to be brought.
You do have a situation of a crowd throwing rocks, and the National Guard is called in, that there is always the chance that it will escalate into the kind of a tragedy that happened at Kent State. And if there's one thing I am personally committed to, it's this. I saw the pictures of those four youngsters in the Evening Star the day after that tragedy. And I vowed then that we were going to find methods that would be more effective to deal with these problems of violence, methods that would deal with those who would use force and violence.
I felt very strongly that if there was blame, it should stop at no lower level than me. If they wanted to, that we gave the orders, we put them there. The tactics and techniques that were used were the ones we taught them, and we put them in that position. And we put them in the position where they feared for their lives.
Kenneth Gale at Kent State.
An investigator for the Commission on Campus Unrest has testified this morning that the FBI found no evidence whatsoever of a sniper on that day last May when National Guardsmen shot and killed four students.
The Scranton Commission wrote that the indiscriminate firing of rifles into a crowd of students and the deaths that followed were unnecessary, unwarranted, and inexcusable.
And so there were several criminal proceedings, including a state investigation and some trials, a federal investigation of the National Guard, which led to eight guardsmen being indicted who were subsequently acquitted. And then in 1975, there was a complex civil trial where the wounded students and the parents of the slain students sued the guardsmen and sued a university official and the governor of state, Governor Rhodes. This trial ended in a 9-3 vote for the defendants, and so there's no money awards. There were several appeals, and in 1978, the trial started again. And after about 6 weeks or so, Judge Thomas negotiated a settlement in the civil trial. And basically, the core of the settlement was a financial award to Dean Kaler of $350,000, with the wounded students getting various monies at a lower rate, and then a statement of regret from the National Guard and Governor Rhodes was signed. Certainly did not admit guilt in any sense of that word. And the parents of the four slain students each got $15,000 apiece, although that was not the issue. They wanted the system to work better. The financial aspect was never an issue for them.
This program was produced at WKSU by Mark Uricki, with engineering help from Joe Gunderman, Andrew Walsh, and David Schmall. Special thanks to Dr. John Weiser, Nancy Burke, John Burnell, Bob Carpenter, and John Cheges. I'm Mark Uricki.